Well, folks, you know you're in for a treat when you hear that tune, because it's time for episode 573 of the Rec Poker Podcast. This is the chats edition, but we also have a forums edition every week, just talking strategy. I am your guest host, John Somsky, also known as Poker Geek MN Everywhere. Normally, I run the Rec Poker home games, but tonight I'm talking with friends and hosting the podcast, which happens every Monday night at 7:30 Eastern Time, 6:30 Central Time, the only time zone that matters, live on YouTube. Join us every week for a free prize. All right, we're going to talk to Keith Brandt in a moment, but first I have to mention we are brought to you by Running Aces, the official sponsor of the Rec Poker podcast. Most of what we do here is free. We are a largely volunteer-based organization, so we depend on the support from our sponsors and also from our premium members who take part in our training material and study opportunities for only $15 a month. Do you like talking poker with friends for less than 50 cents a day? Come connect with over Zoom with other fun, encouraging poker players all trying to get better, or sign up for free, because everything starts with a free account at rec.poker, where all you need to join us is an email address and a smile, but both are mandatory. Remember, you can always get your first month of premium for only $5 using the code RECPOKER at checkout. Now, they foolishly let me host the show tonight, but I am only one man, and it takes a group, a gang, a village, a crew to make magic happen around here. We call this group of wizards the Wrecking Crew, and if you want to learn more about me or the rest of the Wrecking Crew, just go to rec.poker/crew, or you can just listen up, because we're about to meet a few of them right now, starting with our producing co-host, Chris Jones.
Well, I'm Chris Jones. You can find me 5b5 on Twitter or 5x5 in the Poker Stars home game, and I help run our monthly strategy segment called The Deep Dive.
And my name is Joe Kulis. You can find me at Joe Kul PhD on X as well as Blue Sky. And beyond being a one-man gang, I also run the PsyOps version of our workshop once a month, every third Thursday, to help you understand how psychological concepts influence your poker game.
And I'm Keith Brandt. That's Monkey System Online. And I run Monkey's Off-Table Tools every month.
And I'm Rob Washam, and you can find me as Rabman50 just about everywhere. And I take charge during the study, which happens on the first and third Wednesdays of every month. And next month, we're starting a new book. So join us for Excelling at No Limit Hold'em.
And who wrote that book, Rob?
Everyone that you've ever heard of.
Excellent.
It's Jonathan Little, and every chapter is written by a different guest author.
Okay, so I'm pleased to be joined by Keith Brandt this week. Thank you so much for coming. You are a fixture around here, and I'm sure everyone knows you. But in case they don't, how would you define your role in the poker world?
Well, I just retired from full-time working, and so now I'm playing a lot more often, traveling and playing mainly around the Midwest. And I am also here in Rec Poker. I do the monthly Monkeys Off-Table Tools, where we look at tools like Advanced Poker Training, GTO Wizard, Range Trainer Pro, and things like that. And we do some drills, and it's usually a lot of fun because we often are pit ourselves against bots or against the computer and play poker and try to put our heads together and crush the computer and the bots. So some events that I've played in since I retired, the first one I played in was at the Hollywood Casino in St. Louis. And I got a couple cashes in the MSPT event there. I play in Elgin in Chicago quite often, and I've cashed in final table in my last few events there too. And And I've played down at Horseshoe Hammond, and I cast a couple of the events there. So far, it's been a pretty good year. I went down to Riverside in Iowa and got absolutely skunked, but that happens. So,
well, you know, you're supposed to, even the best poker players only cash in like 20% of the tournaments they play.
Yep.
So that's not an issue at all. So you've been a fixture around here about as long as I can remember. What was it that brought you to Rec.Poker?
I was looking for a poker home, because a lot of the podcasts and materials that you see online up at that time, like around 2018, 2019, were, it seemed like they were directed toward professional players. And that's not what I was. I was working full time, and I couldn't find anything for a part-time player like me. And then I just stumbled upon the Rec Poker podcast and found out that this was mostly Midwestern players, mostly from Minnesota, but that's, you know, next door in Wisconsin. And it's for recreational players like me. It was just, it seemed like that's my home. I'm going to join it. I was impressed with the podcast. They looked like they were having fun. They talked a lot of poker. I looked at the website. I was really impressed. So I signed up, and I eventually signed up to be on the Wrecking Crew. And it's been one of the best decisions I ever made.
And so what, prior, you recently just retired, what was your occupation prior to retiring?
I was a technical writer at a Fortune 500 company. I specialized in the proprietary software systems that our company made for its products. These were agricultural and construction heavy machines, and they're run by software, and they needed software operating guides. And I wrote those. I authored those, and I did like copy editing and things for contractors and new people too. Did some training. So
now, do you think there is any skill set overlap between your job and what you're using for poker?
Yeah, it's very technical, and poker has a very technical side to it, as we all know. And it uses a lot of computer tools that are specialized, especially solvers. So just because having a technical analytical bent and what I'm used to, basically, just poker fit very well into it. And the way we study poker fit very well into it.
I should remind all of our listeners on YouTube, if you have any questions, just type them into the chat, and we'll be sure to relay those to Keith. And I'll, of course, our rest of the panel here can unmute at any time and ask questions as well. So what brought you to poker? Why do you like poker?
Good question. I've always been interested in card games ever since I was stationed at Nellis Air Force Base near Las Vegas in the early 80s, and found a book that had called Beat the Dealer, that had a rigorous logical and mathematical approach to blackjack. And I read that and thought, this makes a lot of sense. I'm going to go and I'm going to play blackjack. And I learned that book, and I practiced, and I was making money at it. Because I was counting cards, and I retained that. It's been so long, and I was doing it for so long. I just, it's second nature whenever I sit down at a blackjack table now. Anyway, fast forward to about 2004, I saw a blackjack tournament on the Travel Channel, I think it was, with a host explaining that. I thought, I can do that. I always thought that playing in a casino game that where the players are playing each other instead of against the house seemed like a way to apply some expertise and actually be a winning player. You know, because if you're playing blackjack, they don't like card counters. Your action is not welcome. But poker, your action is more than welcome, and they don't care if you're a winning player, a professional. It's all good for the house. So having the welcome action and the logical approach that you can take to poker, and just the fun of it, is what drew me to the game. I had always played poker very casually up until about, well, I'd say about 2016 or so, and then I decided to make the transition from blackjack tournaments to poker and started studying it more rigorously. And I've been doing it ever since. And now I'm, because now that I'm retired, I'm a poker player. So that's been my story.
Did you ever have a problem with blackjack being backed off by the
yes.
house?
Uh-huh. Yeah, on more than one occasion. One time it was down in Puerto Rico. I'm not going to lie, I was a little bit scared because who knows what they're going to do to somebody that they whose action is not welcome anymore. They're going to take you out back and teach you a lesson. No, that didn't happen. And they waited until I was about $1,000 down before they backed me off. And
you know, if you were $1,000 down, you kind of have to wonder why they backed you off. But
yeah, because they saw the game I was playing and just getting unlucky.
Yeah.
So, but I could tell that I was being backed off. One of the tools that they use is they start cutting the shoe only halfway down, and you can't beat that. And when they started doing that to me, I got the message, and I left. I got backed off down in Laughlin one time. I've never been backed off in Vegas.
And now that you play poker as well, do you worry about like playing blackjack at all and being banned from the casinos or?
No, I don't even go and play blackjack anymore. But the only thing out in the casino that I go and do is I'll go and play video poker just to run some play on my account. You know, I can play video poker. Jacks are better about 800 hands an hour. So you can run up a lot of play on your account pretty quick, and you don't have that much of a disadvantage against the house. So that's how I do it.
So you've been hosting the tools thing for quite a while now. What do you think are some of the biggest things you've learned, or what are the biggest takeaways you have from the studying you've been doing with some of those tools?
The main thing is to always look at it from the standpoint of, like, say, for example, a solver, right? If you can learn how to play the way a solver plays as well as a human possibly could, you're playing defense. All that is unexploitable. It's a theoretical baseline for the way you should play. Like I saw something by Doug Polk in a video where he said that the suspected bots in the online sites are getting have an ROI of maybe 14. That's not spectacular, but that's about all you can really expect if you're playing game theory optimal poker and not trying to deviate from it to exploit opponents. So the chief, getting back to the lessons that I learned, it's that I'm always thinking about, okay, now how can I identify how my opponent is deviating from this so that I can deviate from it in a way that gets the maximum advantage? What should I do if he's open raising too much preflop? What should I do if he c-bets 100% of the time, no matter what? That's the proper use for these tools. And you got other tools like Flopzilla, and GTO Plus could show you basically the mathematical side of it. But in the long run, you got to know how to deviate from that so you can go on offense instead of defense, so that you can get that ROI in tournaments of 50 instead of just 14.
Yeah, that's a lot of what I've heard about studying GTO. One of the best things is to know where and how to exploit people.
Yep.
But in order to know where how to exploit people, you have to know what mistakes they're making. And in order to know what mistakes they're making, you have to know what the optimal play is.
Yes, so exactly. And then the other thing that's kind of good about those tools is you can find out plays that are available to you that you wouldn't have thought of just trying to gain experience by playing, you know, by repetition. Like you can treat king five suited when you've got top pair as if you got something with high value, and you can know when to fold that hand at the same time. And, you know, based on what you see in the solver, now your opponent, especially if your opponents are over folding, you can play some pretty weak hands. If you know they're over folding, you got to know how weak they are. And you do that by studying the tools and then studying your opponent.
Well, speaking of studying, what is your favorite way? What's the best way for you to study poker?
Well, I just signed up for Jocka coaching. So there's a whole series of videos there that that you can take, like little mini courses. And I've been doing that lately. But also, I use the tools that have a trainer in them. Like, for example, a GTO wizard has a trainer where you play hands against the GTO bot. So you can't exploit the GTO bot. You're just trying to avoid playing suboptimally against him. And you can't really know what the GTO strategy is unless you practice at it. It's like studying math. You know, practice problems are the best way to study that.
And then what are your, now that you're retired, I assume your goal is to become a multi-billionaire playing poker now. You're going to start playing the high-stakes games, going on the – so what are your goals now in the poker world?
I think you got to set your goals both realistically, not results-oriented, but also set them high so that you'll strive for it. And, like, I play tournaments. I don't play a whole lot of cash. So when I, every tournament I sit down and play, my goal is to win that championship. And when I know that I'm going to be sitting down, when I'm studying, my goal is to win those championships. And I think that's a good goal to set to your, for yourself. Should you be disappointed? Should you think you fell short if you never win one? No, but you reach for the stars. If you don't quite reach them, you got up that much higher in order to grab the highest rung on the ladder that you could. So I have won small tournaments before, but you know, I have yet to get a six-figure score. You know, that's a dream more than a goal.
Are you planning on like going around, traveling around to several of the tournament series? And
yes,
what type of buy-in ranges are you going to start off with, and where would you like to end up?
Well, I'm using bankroll management principle of having a bankroll of 100 buy-ins. Now, in tournaments, buy-ins range from real cheap to pretty high. You want your average buy-in over the course of a year to be about 1/100th of your bankroll for it. So I've, you know, I when I retired, I had a little bit of extra money in my accounts and things. So I set aside $80K that if I lose, I'm not going to shed a tear over it. But that's my starting poker bankroll, and I'm using that as my benchmark from which I can grow my bankroll. So I want to average $800 per tournament that I play. So the biggest ones that I'm playing right now are the $1,700 main events in the World Series of Poker circuit.
Okay. That's a pretty laudable way of doing it. That's for a recreational player, that's a pretty big bankroll.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a good career, and I got some money to play with. So, I mean, when you think about it, how much money do you spend on your boat for fishing or speedboating? You can spend close to that. Golfers spend a lot of money on lessons and on their equipment. I mean, a lot of hobbies cost that much. So, and this is one that can pay back.
Yes,
and actually make money off of it. So it's almost like a business investment, really. As long as you're good enough to at least break even, including covering your travel expenses.
So how do you plan on maintaining your zeal for the game and not getting burnt out? In other words, how are you going to handle your retirement life and poker balance?
I'm going to take time off once in a while. As a matter of fact, I'm in the middle of that right now. I'm taking about 3 weeks off of playing before the events up at in Elgin at the World Series of Poker circuit start there early next month. And that's when I'm going to pick up playing again. But I'm in one of those breaks right now. So I can confess something. I get insomnia once in a while. That kind of tells me I need a break. So, once I get back to normal again, I'll start playing. I'll be better than ever. I say taking a break. I'm studying every day. So it's not like a total break. It's just right now I'm getting caught up on studying, and I'm going to get back to playing. I'm going to play down in Elgin at that World Series of Poker circuit. and then I'm going to come up by you guys running aces and play that MSPT.
Chris,
I'm looking forward to seeing you guys there.
You had unmuted for a second. Did you have something?
Yeah, well, I was going to kind of take us back to a thing you were talking about with the tools, Keith. When you were talking about, I really liked what you had to say about solvers being tools that help us understand, you know, how to approach the game, but they're not like an answer key. They're something that help us learn pieces. And one of the things you mentioned was sort of figuring out how you approach different types of players. And this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately and thinking about, you know, the approach to the game, but like, how do you, when you sit down at a, you know, an MSPT or a WSOP circuit, stop, what are some things that you start to look at the table that gives you an indication of who you're up against?
Yeah. If I see somebody show when he didn't need to, that's going to be a target until proven otherwise. If I see open limping, that's going to be a target until proven otherwise. And too much cold calling, whether in position or out of position. Now, except for the big blind, who should be cold calling a lot. But there's other things that I look for that are just, they're unorthodox, they're wrong, and that tells me that this is somebody who hasn't studied the game very well, like donking. Mm-hmm. And then showing top pair that is what he donked with. Or just cold calling so much and not having the kind of range advantage or range equality that he should have, because they want to see a flop. Mm-hmm. You know, I even give some of my opponents nicknames inside my minds, and the guy that wants to see a flop, that's Flopmeister, you know.
Well,
there's Flopmeister, there's Limpmeister, there's all kinds of other things. There's Maniac. I don't call him Meister. There's just Maniac. Those Maniacs are actually the ones that you want to see at your table, but you got to strap in. That's the one that's going to increase your chip stack if you do it right, or knock you out, but then you just go buy back in.
Right. Well, and so let's talk about that. Let's talk about, like, what – okay, so you've identified this player – then what are some of the ways in which, okay, now we've got the Flopmeister. We know this person's calling too much. Maybe they're limping. They're just somebody who wants to see flops. How are you approaching? You mentioned they're now a target or whatever, but how are you changing, you know, your approach or your style versus what the solver might suggest that you do against, you know, just a random player?
It all depends, but like if I'm in position on the guy, I'm going to try and see more flops with him, you know, because I'm going to be in position. He doesn't know the game well. He's probably going to bet on a turn, you know, if he calls, if he limp and then calls, because I'm not going to limp behind very much. I don't like doing that. And there is a time and a place for it. But in most cases, I just want to raise, have them call, build the pot a little bit, get everybody else out, and let's go heads up with me in position, the bread and butter situation. So that's one example. That's probably my favorite example. And the player that donks, he's basically saying, where am I at? Well, show him where he's at and give him a big raise, and, you know, and then teach him not to donk into you, donk into somebody else, you know. Because he sees that big raise, he's gonna go, okay, well, this guy's got aces, and he'll even say something like that to you. Your queens are good, you know, and maybe all I had was something connected.
So, if you could pick one event other than the main event to win, because I think everyone would choose the main event, but what other event would you like to, you know, have a deep run or potentially a win in?
Anywhere or
yeah, anywhere, anything.
And I assume by main event you mean the one in Vegas.
Well, yeah, I mean the WSOP main event is probably the top at everyone, so I'm ruling that out. You can't choose that one.
Okay, probably the WSOP circuit main event down in Elgin, because I know all those people or a lot of them, and it would just be kind of cool to do that in front of the regulars that I play against all the time.
Yep, that sounds about right for me. It'd probably be like one of the MSPTs here in Minnesota.
Yeah.
You know, at Running Aces or something like that.
Yeah. A close second would be to actually win one of the Sunday weeklies they have down there in Elgin. Because I've final tabled it, but I haven't won it yet.
And would you say, how much of your play do you play online versus live?
I don't hardly play at all online. It's mostly live. I find I do better live than online. I'm going to try and get back into it, though. During the pandemic, I played online, and I kind of like got away from it. I dabbled in it here and there since the pandemic, but mostly I haven't played online much. I'm going to try it, though. I'm going to see what I can do in cash games and small tournaments, mainly just to get the reps. Because I, you know, the nearest poker tournament to me where I live is an hour and 20 minutes away. That's, you know, a fair amount of traveling, and they don't have them every day, and they're too small if they do have them. So I need the reps, and I'm going to get back into it.
Yeah, I think that's a fairly common thing. In general, playing live is more fun, being around people. It's more social. You're interactive. But it also you have your commute time. The rate of play is probably about 1/5 as fast. You know, you're getting in 5 times as many hands per hour if you're single tabling online. And if you multi-table, you know, that's even more. Yep. So that makes a big difference.
Yep. Online, you can't get live reads, though.
That's very true.
I've gotten pretty good at that. I think that's an important part of the way I play.
So what are some of the live reads? What are some of those tells that you're looking for?
Well, my life's experiences actually gave me a pretty good instinct for sensing predation. I can, like, you know, the facial expression a cat has when it's about to pounce on a mouse. You can't hide that. You know, I used to be a hunter. I don't hunt anymore, but I know how it feels when prey is approaching. And then also, so you just, it's a hard thing to not manifest physically. And then, so I, first of all, I have that, the empathy of knowing how that person must feel. And then my career in the Air Force brought me to third world countries. And my experience walking around in third world cities gave me a sensitivity to sensing that in others. I actually got mugged once, you know, so that helps. So an experience like that helps you learn something like sensing predation. It's just, I've come to depend on it. I won't say depend on it. I've come to trust it is what I should say. If it doesn't always work, the crippling hand for me at Horseshoe Hammond, I didn't sense it in the guy when he flopped his quad, but you know, it usually does work.
Yeah. So, you know, I think I'll try to bypass the need to get mugged in order.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't recommend it. I didn't get hurt. You know, they got what they wanted and they didn't get hurt and all was well, but I learned something.
Joe, did you have a question?
Well, I'm first curious as to, since Keith, we played a couple tournaments together, what your nickname for me is. Am I like, you know, Limpmeister?
My name for you is Nemesis. Nemesis. You are always the one to get my chips.
Hardly. So my actual question, though, is what I've been fascinated in getting to know you, Keith, is about how you've kind of made a plan for your retirement with regards to your poker career. A lot of people don't know that individual men in particular in their first year of retirement are actually at a much higher rate of dying secondary to things like depression and a loss of role and a loss of purpose. And in listening to you talk often, you often brought up how you planned for it, how it was an intentional thing for you in terms of what you're going to do. Now, part of that's the money, right? And, you know, having been fortunate to get a bankroll is great, but there must have been a lot of other things that you did that helped you kind of prepare for the moment that, because when you did retire, it was like it just started. Can you talk to people listening in terms of what you did in order to make that all happen?
Well, I've been saving the money for years, and during the pandemic, that wasn't hard. It just seemed like money flowed into everybody's bank account. And, you know, as you get into middle age, you know, your 401k grows and had more in there than I planned on having. So that made it easy to have the bankroll. But I knew all along that when I retired, I knew I needed to keep busy. I knew you need to have a plan. Don't just start sitting in a tavern or watching TV. If there's any bit of advice I can give to guys that are contemplating retirement, it's that. Have a plan. Do something. Keep your mind active. Keep your body active. A fellow that I ran into in Las Vegas one morning just playing some video poker had a word of advice for me as well, because I told him about this plan. And he goes, let me give you another word of advice. Take care of your spiritual health. And it doesn't have to mean going to church, although it could. It just means something like volunteer work, something that's going to make you your soul feel good. You need to do something like that too. Because, you know, now my hobby has turned into my main thing, and I'm looking for something like that. I'm a member of the life member of the VFW. I might start volunteering for VFW stuff. I haven't done it yet. I've only been retired for a few months, and I've been so busy, I haven't had time for anything else. The important thing is stay busy, keep your mind active, and eventually find some kind of thing that'll make you just feel like a better human being. Life gave you a lot. Life gave you a lot. Life let you retire when you're still healthy. Give back a little bit.
Right. I think that's sage advice. I just have one other question. What is the greatest football team on the planet? And what? When you answer the Packers, why? I think it's very important.
Well, because the Packers, because the G on the helmet stands for greatness, not for Green Bay. They'll tell you that when you go on a Lambeau Field tour. And not only that, but we just get one Hall of Fame quarterback after another. We got our next one starting to get rolling now.
Our guests will be really happy that I cut the stream for about a minute there. So no.
No, okay. I got a lot of respect for our purple-clad brethren to the west. So, you know, even though we want to beat the pants off you every time. So,
yeah, I think the feeling is mutual there.
Yeah.
So, for you, to me, it seems like when I talk to people from Wisconsin, it depends upon where they live in Wisconsin. Do you consider your biggest rival the Vikings or the Bears?
Actually, it's kind of a tie because I live in southeastern Wisconsin, just a few miles from the Illinois border. We got a lot of Bears fans around here. It's kind of hard to hate the Bears. We beat them 10 times in a row. It's hard to hate a team that you beat 10 times in a row now. but my when I was growing up, when I was a kid, becoming an NFL fan, the Packers were a bad team and the Vikings were the ones that crushed us game after game, year after year. And I developed a hatred of them that started at childhood. So a fan hatred, you know. But so even now that, you know, the Packers have had the best of it with that rivalry for the past number of years. The Vikings have a good program over there. You're going to win a Super Bowl eventually.
Well, so far we've been doing our best to prove you wrong there.
Yeah.
Keith is the ever optimist in the wrecking crew. So.
All right.
Yeah, I used to think the Cubs would never win a World Series, and that got proved wrong a few years back.
Well, true. If they can win, almost anyone can.
Yeah.
I think that we're coming close on time. Is that correct, our producer, sir? So we should continue with Steak Study Stack.
Okay. That sounds delightful.
Okay, so for those who don't know what Steak Study Stack is, it's a game where you're given three poker players and you have to choose one to study with, one to stake. In other words, you're going to loan them money to win you some more, and then one to stack. You just want to take all their chips. Take it away, Chris.
All right. Well, we have a suggestion in the chat, but I'm not going to make you guess my name, so I'm going to change one of these up. But the names are Taylor Moss, Rob Washam, and let's go with Pet Fett, Kim Kilroy.
Okay. So for steak, I'd have to go with Taylor Moss. I mean, he's successful. I mean, even the pros up in Minnesota talk about him. He's a very successful player. So who are the other names again?
Rob and Kim.
Okay, study. It's Rob. I've been doing that with Rob in the book study for a long time now. So I just keep doing that. So by process of elimination for stack, it's Kim. Even though I like Kim. Sorry, Kim. But I'm going to treat you, I'm going to stack you just like I'm going to stack these guys here in the panel right now. So everybody gets treated equally by me. This is a stacking democracy.
I think that's one of the hardest ones I've had because I know I would like to stake, study, and stack all of those a lot.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. And now we are on to the speed round. So in this one, you need to be fast. Mm-hmm. If you don't know the answer to a question, you can say pass. And are you going to do this, Chris, or am I? All right. Then are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. What is your favorite poker hand?
Aces.
Poker, a game of gambling or skill?
It's a game of skill.
What is your biggest pet poker pet peeve?
Guys being asses at the table to the female players.
Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Absolutely.
What's one player you respect and why?
Actually, Eric Seidel is my hero. He's the same age as me, and he's one of the toughest crushers in the whole world, and he's still doing it. He's been doing it for a long time. He's kept up with the game, and I have a lot of respect for that.
So yellow light, slow down or speed up?
Slow down.
Is Ace-King a drawing hand?
No.
What is the code word for not chopping the blinds?
What's that?
Oh, what is the what is the code word for not chopping the blinds?
What's that, cheeseburger?
Now, okay, you got to clarify. Is that because you've heard it anywhere else or you've heard it from Jim?
I've heard it from Jim.
Okay, so that doesn't count. Okay. what's one thing that makes you truly happy?
Winning.
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Yes, sort of.
What about a taco?
No.
And what is your childhood favorite family holiday meal?
That was always Thanksgiving.
And are you pro chop or no chop?
Pro chop.
All right. Then let me run the numbers. There's got to be a glitch. According to this, you got 1.2 million points. And I don't think that's even possible. So I think with Jim gone, I think the calculator's all out of whack. But for right now, you are the lead in points for this. Okay, folks, you can start typing the words food bank into the chat, and you never know who needs food near you, so type that in, and you will be able to win something for free, even. And now, John Somsky, would you lead us in the home game results? Why, yes, John, I will. I would love to do that. Okay, so for nightly events, Uncle Tom Cabin got his first nightly victory for the year. Pet Vet 33, Kim Kilroy, got her first nightly victory for the year. Stewie 13, Stuart Carriage, got his third nightly victory for the year. Graphic 16, Roger Schutte, won the daily mixed event. Mike B, 172, Mike Bear, got his second and third international victories for the year, sweeping the day on Saturday. And then Steve Traps, Steve Tucker won the LPP event, so he can contact info@rec.poker for his free month at Learn Pro Poker. Okay, so I guess we're on to food bank people.
All right. Well, we've got three names in the chat.
Chris, to make it a four-sided dice so that you don't have to try to find a three-sided dice because those are hard to find, I'll put 20 in for every four that you
every
roll.
Four I roll. All right. Well, yeah. You're going to have to take my word for it because I'm not logging in, but I will do it. But I have the order as the RRCCC, number one, Joe Rafter, number two, and K-Poker Wannabe, number three. So we're hoping to roll fours. And we have a three. So that's K-Poker Wannabe. Congratulations. You can contact info@rec.poker. There we go. To claim your prize.
All right. I think that, do we have any more questions from the chat or anyone else? Okay. With that, I think that brings us to an end. Thanks to Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. They have an upcoming event very soon. I don't remember what it is. Thanks for everyone who came by. Thanks, Rob and Keith and Joe and Chris. And have a good day.